Committee will come to order. Please call the roll.
Senator Hastert. Senator Meyer.
Here.
Senator Perkins.
Here.
Representative Burkhardt.
Here.
Representative Escobel.
Here.
Representative Moniz.
Here.
Representative Nicholas.
Here.
Representative Stubson.
Here.
Representative Wallace.
Here.
Co-Chairman Harshman.
Here.
Co-Chairman Bebout.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Okay, first item of business is we got to deal with some rules. Is that correct, Don?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. What I have provided to you is last Joint Appropriation Committee's rules, and the proposed amendments are in underlined format on your top of your pile today.
Does everybody have a copy of the rules, proposed rules? Everybody got them? Do I have a motion? Second? Moved and second. Any discussion? Senator Perkins. Steve, why don't you define that for us newbies? That'd be me, too. Or Don, you want to do that? Don, do that.
Which number is the
number two?
Mr. Chairman, the intent there is that individual motions on, say, a position in the Secretary of State's office require a majority of the committee. But when you approve the budget bill at the end, it will require three votes in the affirmative from the House and four votes in the affirmative in the House and three votes in the affirmative in the Senate. So the final action on the budget bill.
Go ahead, Drew.
Right. The question I have is, it says, it's, and I understand what it says in two, and then you get down, this is the exception, except for a final vote on any budget item. That would indicate to me that it's not just the final budget, but it's a budget item, and I don't know what a budget item is in this context, and that's what I'm struggling with.
Mr. Chairman, the intent was on the bill. If you would feel more comfortable to change item to bill, that would accomplish the same purpose and perhaps be more clearer.
You got an amendment?
Otherwise, you are looking at a situation where you're going to have a full membership, a majority of the full membership of either the House and the Senate to conduct any business, and that means just going through the budgets by themselves.
Is that a motion?
I would move to strike item and insert budget bill.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Any other discussion on the draft rules? Any other discussion? Do we need to call the roll? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Those draft rules have now been accepted. And what I want to talk a little bit before we get to Max and the Secretary of State is just how we, Co-Chairman Harshman and I have discussed about what we're going to do and sort of the agenda and how we're going to try to move through these next 8 days. And it'll probably be the way we'll continue this fall and into the next session. And what we're going to do is when we say 8 o'clock, it's 8 o'clock, and we're going to gavel in. And if you're here, fine. If you're not, we're going to start, unless we don't have a quorum. And if we don't have a quorum, Steve and I are going to have a meeting with our committee members. But we're going to start at 8. And what we're going to do when we take breaks, instead of saying we're going to take a 15-minute or a 12-minute or whatever, we're going to say, like it's 8:05, we'll say we will gavel in at 8:20, and the gavel will strike at 8:20, and we'll start up. Senator Meyer, you're going to be the vice chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, and Steve's going to make some comments about that. We've got a lot of work ahead of us to do, and we're going to try to do this. And one thing that we're not going to limit is any discussion. And the way we're going to run our meetings is we've distributed to the senators their different respective agencies that you'll be more or less responsible for. So what I'm going to do is like the when we start out with Max, that's one of the agencies that I'm in charge of, and I'll present to the floor. So I'll sort of spearhead the questions and take the initiative, but everybody will participate. But when we get like to the tourism, Dan, which is one of yours, you know, we'll listen to the presenter and the director and her comments, but then I'm going to look to you and have you kind of lead your questions first, because you're going to be responsible for carrying that on the floor and be the one that people will go to more than not. And then after you've had your questions and you're satisfied with your answers or whatever you think, then we'll go to the rest of the committee. that's what we've talked about doing, and Steve and I have discussed that. It's just a way of really getting focused on who's going to do what, and then we can get to the point and try to get through this thing as quickly as we can. Co-Chairman Harshman, would you like to make any comments?
Well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And Eli and I met for about an hour and a half, and it's going to run much of the questioning that we have the last several years in JEC. And you know that when you go to some committees, it's all runs through the chair, and he actually gives you kind of a physical and a nod look to go ahead and talk. Rather than that, we'd still, if Tim Subson's working on a question, line of questioning with you, still address the chair, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Stubson, and I might be typing notes and not even give you eye contact, right? But we want to, and then you keep the through the Mr. Chairman, but we don't have to get that physical head nod, yes, your turn to speak, but we still want to always address the chairman so it's not a personal kind of conversation one-on-one. I'd remind everybody that this is always being recorded and broadcast worldwide. I don't think Carolyn doesn't have headphones today, so it's important we have our mics on so she can hear us. Representative Wallace, we've kind of lined up in seniority. I really like our bench lineup here on both sides, and I think it's going to be it's new to a lot of us, but we've been working hard at it. Representative Wallace is going to be the House Vice Chair, so I think how that works, when we're in joint session, if I'm working a bill, then Eli will chair, but if we're in a House committee only and I'm working a bill then or gone, then Representative Wallace will chair, and that's my understanding, correct? And then similar thoughts, we've divvied up all the agencies already, and we've sent that information to the House floor, so I will be the presenter on your agency, and so, again, as Eli talked, I'll kind of lead some questions. Later on today, I think Representative Burkhart is with Workforce Services, so he'll lead the question. We'll all question, but those guys, we want to be the point men on these certain agencies. So we've divvied up the workload. It's just too much. And, you know, frankly, there's not another Phil Nicholas who remembers all of it and knows all. We're going to divide the workload a little differently. Okay? So I think that's – and then I think our plan is to go come off the floor at about 2:55, try to start at 3:00. And be done by 6 each evening, then Friday start a little early, and no afternoon sessions unless we have to into the second and third week. Anything else?
The only other thing, Steve, is we've kept the, by design, noons open, and that's for if we should have some individual committee meetings in our respective bodies, but also if we have a spillover or there's something we think we need to continue with those agencies in the morning so we do not get way behind that we can just call them back in over the lunch hour. So, you know, this is the only committee all of us serve on, so we should be able to do that. Does any members of the House or Senate Appropriations Committee have any questions or comments they'd like to make at this time? Okay. Max, good morning. Welcome. The floor is yours.
Good morning. We realize that time is limited, and we will be very respectful of your time and be as brief as possible. I'd like to start out by introducing the staff that's with us today, Deputy Pat Arp, Kelly Varick, Chief Auditor from our Compliance Division, Kaylee Nelson, our Controller, and Tom Cowan, Director of our Administrative Services Division. Since this is the first time for many of the members of this committee, I'd like to just start at the top and give a short overview of what we do, a brief history, a look at our finances, and specifically our cuts. While our duties are diverse, most are dictated by statute. We administer Wyoming's administrative election laws, business entities laws, commercial register agent acts, security laws, notary public statutes, bucking horse and rider protection, and a couple dozen other statutory laws. When I first came into office, we identified several ways that we felt we could better deliver a high level of service to the public and provide those services efficiently and as inexpensively as possible. For the past 6 years, our office has been up to our eyeballs in technology projects. Many of them you recognize: statewide voter registration system, online filing candidates, BioWare business programs. Having said that, projects are not our main focus. Our work, while not sexy, is critical day-to-day administration of statutes. We have been at this for a long time. We know how to deliver those services to the public as economically as possible and provide a high level of quality projects. Historically, Secretary Ullman, the late Secretary Joe Meyer, and I have not been before this committee with supplemental budget requests. We have not grown state government. Here's a quick financial look at our agency overall. In the process of delivering services, our agency returns $36 million to the general fund, primarily from fees for business for the business division and securities filings. The staff manages, this is especially unique in the fact that most of that $38 million comes in $150 increments. The staff manages this volume through technology and dedicated service. Now I'll speak directly about the budget cuts. Looking at the Secretary of State's budget, 75% of our general fund budget is people to do the job necessary to meet our statutory requirements. Our operating costs are the other 25%. So it's not possible to cut 4% without cutting a person and still operate the agency. Our attorney represents the bulk of our proposed cuts. There is a person in that position now who's been with us for 8 years with our agency and has been with state government for 27 years. I reluctantly made this decision. I did so because cutting from the other 25% of the budget would cripple our ability to maintain our services. It does bother me to cut this position, but I want to emphasize that the alternative is worse. The remainder of the cuts are taken from maintenance for computer programs. I'll end my comments here and ask Kelly Verrick to take over, and she will be happy to provide you with more detail. Kelly?
Kelly?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'd also like to just give you a high-level overview of our office and then present the proposed cuts. We are required in our budget book to list all of our statutory duties. When we counted them, we came up with 47 separate programmatic statutory duties. This is a non-inclusive list. Most of the public, and of course you all know that we administer elections. We oversee statewide elections, but this also includes campaign finance, lobbyist registration, and ethics disclosure. The other area that we're most known for is business entity registration. We register 14 different types of entities, which is over 104,000 registered companies. The business division also files 3,000 agriculture liens and 73,000 UCC with the banking industry, and trademarks and trade names. Other aspects of our agency includes regulation of investing. We register over 84,000 stockbrokers and 1,300 brokerage firms. Our compliance division also oversees fraud prevention and investor awareness. We commission nearly 12,000 notaries public. We register and regulate 400 commercial registered agents. And the Secretary of State is responsible for all state agency rules. Lesser known examples of our agency include processing over 3,000 apostilles per year, which are international authentication documents. We also maintain legislative journals and bill jackets, regulate and protect the Bucking Horse and Rider trademark, pardons, commutations, restoration of rights, regulation of the state seal, extraditions and requisitions, and oaths of office for boards and commissions. We have a staff of 31 people, but the volume we produce and the diversity of our services is very unique. Now to our finances in a nutshell. Our administration budget is operated on $6.7 million per biennium, and we generate over $36 million to the general fund. And this is not just a matter of receiving the money. The filing and processing of this paperwork takes time. When you think about $36 million coming in payments of $50 and $100, it shows how labor-intensive our office really is. Mr. Chairman, to present our budget, we believe that you're working from the 2013-2014 supplemental budget request book. I'd like to ask you to turn to page 10 of that book. You'll see under Section 7 that our overall general fund budget reduction target was $260,046. Agencies were asked to consider 8% in potential cuts, and this is the number that you'll see for our office. These are the numbers on the left side of the page. On the right side, you'll see the column Governor's Recommendation. This totals 4% of our budget, which is $130,023. As Secretary Maxfield said, we are putting before you position number 27, which is our sole attorney position. That cut would total $121,009. And since that didn't quite get us to our 4%, it only got us to 3.7%, we took the remainder of that from our computer maintenance funding, which is $9,014, to get us to the total of $130,023, which is our 4%. At this time, we'll stand for any questions or comments.
Okay, thank you. One of the things we're going to do, Don, is every budget we go through, we're going to talk about the biannualized and making sure that we understand the 4% and 8%. So I'm going to ask you to tell us that, in fact, what you think we have done with each budget so we're clear. So that's my first question for you, and then they can respond if we need to have that.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is an unusual budget in that all of the cuts are fully biennializable. But I think the budget office is going to raise a point, or I can, and that is with respect to the position that is being cut. Technically, that position is approximately 30% special revenue and 70% general funds. They've taken all of the general funds out of that position and none of the special revenue out of that position. You can see that on the final page of their presentation after page 18. That's what's called a D3 sheet, which illustrates the 68.85% general funds, 31.15% other funds. Now, a possible response to that is they're just going to move the special revenue to another account and take the general funds. That's what we expect them to do, but I'll let them respond.
Kelly, would you or Max, who would like to respond to that? Pat?
Mr. Chairman, if I might. Yes, Mr. Chairman, the compliance division is partially funded from general fund and partially from what we call SEC funds. Those are funds which come from stock brokerages fees, and it pays for about 2.5 staff members. So, indeed, as Don said, position 27 at present is currently split part general fund and about a third SEC funds. So what we will indeed do so that we make our 4% whole when we give this position, if we do that, and it'll happen in July, then the funds would need to be all general funds. So what we will do is we'll take a position and make a different position part and part, make the attorney position all general fund, so that at the time that we must do a cut, if we must, it will all be general fund. Don is correct about that.
Okay, and then from our standpoint, that's something you'll do internally. Don, we don't need to do anything from the committee's perspective on that, do we? We don't have to have it in the markup since they'll take care of it, and we're just going to say it's general funds and it'll be handled that way?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. All right. So then with that in mind, then it is biannualized and the 4%, it'll all be general funds. Max, I've got a question for you. You know, we did, three constitutional amendments, and I know that before Co-Chairman Nicholas had some questions about the cost of that. Now do you have those costs in, and do you have that number, and how did that come in on your budget, and how did you see that? Did it work out like you thought it would? I know there was a number in there that it could be as high as $300,000+, and we had three, and some of the others didn't go through. Could you give us a quick update on that, please, or Pat or whomever?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I can. There was a new fund set up this past election season. And what would happen is, as each constitutional amendment comes forward from the legislature, we're asked to do a fiscal note on that. And we work with the Wyoming Press Association to know how much it will cost to actually publish that constitutional amendment should it pass the legislature and then head to the ballot. And so for each of those, we give a dollar amount, and a certain amount is put into its own fund to cover them. And then when the time comes, in this case, as you said, three of them passed and needed to go forward onto the ballot. When we're really just a flow through, but when the bill comes in to pay for those constitutional amendments to be published in newspapers across the state, then we make payment for that. And then the residual amount that's in that fund, and normally there would be, because there would be other fiscal notes that had accumulated in there that hadn't made the whole process, the residual amount immediately after the election goes back to the general fund. It is reverted, I believe, on at the end of November of the election year, so it goes right back.
What were those numbers? How much did we have in there, and how much did it actually cost?
I think we had about $377,000 in there, and the actual cost, okay, Mr. Chairman, I don't have the exact figure, but we believe between $90,000 and $100,000.
Yeah, and you don't need to get that back to us. That's fine. Okay. I just wanted it approximately. Now, if we do some, should we have some constitutional amendments that come through this year? Will that, in fact, be with the bills, and, or will you, in fact, have a separate approach? How will that work if we do some more, say we have them going on the next ballot next year? How would that work?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that it will operate the same way as it did in the last election season, which would be we would be asked to do a fiscal note for each constitutional amendment, so you will know what it would cost to publish that should it pass the legislature. And then those funds would be held out and reserved for that purpose. It would be two sessions, because there are two sessions within which you could make those decisions. And then out of that fund, again, we would pay for the publication, and I presume it will be done in such a way that the rest will revert.
Okay. The next question I have, and it's just kind of a general question, but I know you said $37 million comes from special revenues. Most of those are from the reports that all of us, including me, fill out for our business, and there's fees and structural and all of that. I remember that there was a time where we were looking at trying to get the bigger corporations, and we had some levels and limitations in there to try to generate more money. Is that still something that, because of the nature of huge mega corporations coming in, that we could get them wanting to file here and do things? And is that still active, or are there monies coming from that? This happened, Pat, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years ago. Is that still active, and is it still working?
Well, Mr. Chairman, there are a number of things that drive so much money coming in. Probably the greatest thing is that we were the first state to start with LLCs. And even though most states now offer the limited liability company as a business entity option, still Wyoming is very popular for that. And we don't need to advertise or anything like that. I think Wyoming has the reputation of it's a good place to file your LLC. So we do get a lot through that, and that was the big impetus, say, 15 years ago about how Wyoming was getting so much business traffic from out of state and did really increase our filing fees. And those fees have really grown pretty steadily across those 15 years. It is true that with corporations, there is an annual report fee. Most corporations, frankly, pay the minimum fee, which is $50. There are the high rollers that pay on a percentage of assets located in Wyoming, and I suppose that could be revisited again at some time by the legislature, but there's always the balance between wanting to keep that annual report fee or tax, really, low enough to attract business. And yet it does generate a lot of money because there are some very big corporations in this state. But by far, I would say close to 85% of those 100,000 businesses are small in the sense that they pay the minimum fee of $50.
The next question, of course, is we had some reporting when, and you know, that people forget, and then if they don't file, obviously they're null and void, and then we notify them, and we've been doing that. How's that working out? Because we went to a different system a while ago, and does that seem to now be finally sort of smoothed out and everybody's satisfied with it? Is it working?
I think overall it really is that people are getting used to getting the reminder by email. I think starting to pay more attention, and we've had many fewer cases of delinquency than we've had in the past.
Okay. Okay, committee. Anybody have any questions? Steve, you got anything?
Just a question on your proposed cuts. And my technology went blades up first day, so couldn't annotate. I don't very cut bait here, but I'd had some notes on my iPad. Was about your proposal was on some maintenance fees, and I guess we've done so much work on really, and maybe elaborate a little bit on that. I don't want to be in a deal where we cut some maintenance fees now and then we have a huge bill 5 years from now.
Mr. Chairman, we've had a very difficult time coming up with that because exactly what you say, a lot of times we'll come to the legislature and we'll want to put in place a major IT project that's going to be very effective and better serving the public, but that's just the beginning of it because we still have to maintain it. So this was reluctant. It was kind of down to the fact that, as I said, almost everything we do is statutory. And so we came down with just very few decisions. One was cutting a position, and two was digging into the maintenance side. And we don't want to do either one. But we know that we're part of the game.
What about I probably ask everybody, and I don't have it right in front of me, but out of state travel, it's pretty minimal. What is that budget number? Your out of state travel. Some agencies have brought in cuts to that. Are there?
Our out-of-state travel is minimal, and I'm sure they'll get that. We have one conference a year in Washington of National Association of Secretaries of State. There's a Lieutenant Governor's Conference that I do not attend because of the finances. I think they're coming up with the numbers here. $15,000 biennium.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, member of the committee?
No,
Mr. Senator Meyer.
Max, just to kind of get an idea about government growth in general, can you tell us what the number of employees were in the year 2000?
Max?
That's something I think I'll ask everybody so we can kind of get an idea about, where the growth has occurred. I doubt if it's really occurred a bunch in your shop, but I'm sure other places it's quite large.
Mr. Chairman, we have that here. A couple years ago, we added a compliance division auditor, and that was because we added that program where we now regulate commercial registered agents because of the business fraud that I think many of the people in this room have worked on before. So that was one position. The attorney position was not here that number of years ago. And we have two positions that were added quite a few years ago, and those two were compliance auditors as well. They are for the securities industry. Those are not generally funded. Those are SEC funded, that special fund. Was there one other? Oh, yes, one more, and that was probably about 5 years ago, and we were allowed to add a controller position, Kaylee's position, and that was because just the amount of money coming through our agency was skyrocketing, and handling that with one fiscal person that was at a clerk level did not seem wise. And so because we handle such high volume of funds, we were allowed to have a controller as well.
Go ahead.
And I guess I probably should have stated with general fund. So a lot of those new positions were special funds, and they were for compliance reasons and necessarily not general funds, growing the general fund budget.
Yeah, and I think, Don, what we're going to do, that's a good question. Every agency should be prepared to have that for us. Okay? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, as you can tell by the tone and content of our presentation, these cuts that we're offering, and I know everybody probably comes in and says this, but we have really dug through this, and every cut would be detrimental to our ability for our agency to continue to offer the quality services we have. And I stand on our record that over the time period, including the last my predecessors, we have been very frugal within our agency. And as I mentioned before, we have never come in for a supplemental budget request. And we've all been very cautious in how we've handled our funds. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Drew, you have a question?
Chairman, I've got a few, if I may.
Sure.
I just wanted to go back and touch on something. I didn't quite hear the answer I was looking for in response to Chairman Harshman's question about the maintenance fees on the software. And really what I think just comes out is by cut with the software cuts and the small cut that we're having in maintenance fees for software, will that result in us having to expend a large amount of money in the future as a major capital item because we essentially have deferred maintenance and we find that we're no longer able to be supported, or just concerned about that maintenance cut and what that means down the road in 3 or 4 or 5 years?
I think that's a serious concern, and we talked about that a great deal, Senator. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Senator, we talked about that a great deal, and we are kicking the can down the street on that because the maintenance is ongoing, and as long as we stay on top of it, it's much easier to stay on top of it and much more fiscally responsible than it is, because it is going to grow. It doesn't go away just because we don't do it.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I can
go ahead.
Keep going. The other thing I wanted to ask you about on the, you talked about your the number of employees since 2000. A couple of questions I would have for you is, what do you see is, what's the difference in the number of filings as well as the amount of fees that have been paid in 2000 versus now?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the number exactly of filings then and now, but I would say we were probably 15 years ago, probably at about 50 to 58,000 business filings, and we're now, the number was 100 and something thousand. So it just steadily grows, and it's interesting. It really steadily grows. No matter the economy, it doesn't up and down like the stock market. It just pretty steadily grows in terms of numbers of filings. Again, I think that might be attributed to Wyoming's reputation of two things. One, having certain types of filings available. And the second thing is our turnaround time by statute is 5 days. And in many other states, the turnaround time for getting a company established is well over a month, but often much longer than that. And so I think just the speed of it is attractive. And so that means that the income has grown in that same steady pattern. The fees themselves as to what we charge have not changed much over time. They've been staying pretty much at $50 and $100 depending what you're filing. There has been discussion about it over those last years at the Corporations Committee, and I think there's always just some reluctance that in this state, we have so many kind of mom-and-pop businesses, a lot of LLCs formed around ranching and farming and those types of things, that there's been some reluctance to raise those fees, but they've not been raised much over time.
Mr. Chairman, following up on that, and so far, it sounded to me like our business finance have probably not quite doubled, but close to doubled since 2000, to indicate to me then, is that it fair to assume that the amount of revenue generated by the filing fees has almost doubled over that same period of time?
Go ahead.
Yes, that's true. Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's true.
Okay. So, all right. And then the last question I had, which I think you just alluded to, but just fleshing that out a little bit more on the fees that we charge in-state for our various filing fees, have you done a comparison with our neighboring states or other states that you'd see as, you know, I don't know if the other states would be Delaware or Nevada or whatever else we might be comparable with, but where do we stand with respect to our fees as compared to those?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, we have done a couple studies around that. There are places, and I couldn't tell you off my head, but there are a few things we charge a bit more for. There are some things we charge less for. But overall, we are pretty much in the running with other states. We're not incredibly less than what other states charge. And you are correct. It would be Nevada and Delaware are the other big filing states that we would want to match up with. I do know that Nevada recently, in the last year, increased their fees, and it did drive a lot of filings to Wyoming. And so our volume did take a skyrocket there for a while, so there might be something there we could look at as a fee.
So you're saying there's price points in fees. That may have application broader than just this agency. Thank you very much.
Sue, did you have a question?
My question's been answered.
It's been answered. Anybody else have any questions? Anybody else? I have one on the Help America Vote Act, and there's a huge amount of money for software maintenance. Is that flow-through money, and how does that handled?
Mr. Chairman, the Help America Vote Act is federal funds, and, let's see. In year 2000, it all precipitated out of that election. Our funds started coming in to do election reform in about 2003 and 4. Most of those funds are residual from that. It was a funding mostly one time. We've received little funds from the Fed since then. The greatest outgo was very early on in the process, which was the required purchase of electronic voting equipment statewide. And the other very large expenditure out of that fund initially and ongoing is the operation of the statewide voter registration system. And so that is the high technology piece there.
And when you do your software maintenance, how often do you bid those? Is it like a five-year contract that you have? I know it's competitively bid, but tell me a little bit about that, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, our contracts never go beyond 2 years at a time because they have to stay within the biennium because that's what you're funded for. And even though those funds, actually we already had them, we still stay with the two-year cycle. So we do a two-year contract at a time. When that was first built, it was very rigid and required as to what the federal government wanted that system to meet for standards. And so it was bid out, and there were a number of large technology companies across the country that bid on that. And then, of course, once we have that company, we pretty much have stayed with them or a subsidiary of them. And why I say that is election companies have kind of come and go and be bought out, but we've mostly stayed with the same people and the same process since the beginning for our voter registration.
Okay. Don, is our state treasurer on the way? The outside? Oh, okay. Anything else for our Secretary of State? Max, thank you. You have any last comments?
Mr. Chairman, just that I want it noted with your comments on the gavel that minus the time spent in the beginning, we stay within our time limit.
Noted. Mark, please come up. Welcome to the Appropriations Committee. You and I share a commonality. This is the first for both of us, so we'll get through it. Just introduce your people that you want and... floor is yours.
Sure.
Are you by yourself? Oh, no, you've got some. Okay, you've learned that.
I was a little nervous when I saw Yellowstone Falls here. I thought the Chairman and members of the committee, it is an honor for me to be here today.
Mark, can you push that button?
There we go.
Reminder, I'll push mine too, that we are being recorded and broadcast on the web, and so it's important we push the button and our light glows. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. As you know, a little over 2 months ago, I assumed the position of state treasurer following the passing of one of Wyoming's most remarkable statesmen, Joe Meyer. In doing this, I was conscious of the large footprints left by my three immediate predecessors, Joe Meyer, now Congresswoman Cynthia Lummis, Stan Smith, and the work they did to put the state of Wyoming on a well-diversified and more comprehensive approach to investments. This committee and others share in the deserved kudos for the courage that took and the benefits it has wrought. I am here today in appreciation of the effort, yours and theirs, and humbled by the responsibility all of that implies, because these are interesting times in which we live, and ones which will further emphasize a mature, considered, anticipatory, and careful approach to management of the state's investments. But I am here confidently that we will meet those challenges because of a competent, lean, and productive staff with years of experience and a fluency of duty that has made my transition from businessman to treasurer unproblematic. I congratulate them on their work ethic and their commitment to the people of the state of Wyoming. I have some of those members of my staff here today, and I'd like to recognize them, even though you may already know them. Their importance to the state should be recognized. To my left is Deputy Sharon Garland. Behind me, Chief Investment Officer Michael Walden Newman. General Counsel Betsy Anderson. Is she here? Yes. Chief Accountant Darla Cohn. Internal Portfolio Manager Diana Walter, Unclaimed Property Director Nancy Russell, IT Administrator Pam Hamilton. We are here together to answer your questions today. Since my appointment to this position, I have been diligent in becoming familiar with the evolution of the state's investments, as well as meeting with our consultant RV Coons and all the existing managers. All in all, that has been a little more than 20 interviews on a wide variety of topics, including fixed income, equities, real estate, and the many approaches we have taken to investing in each class. I am happy to report we are well diversified by asset and by strategy. Just a snapshot. As of December 31st, the four permanent funds, the Mineral Trust Fund, Hathaway Scholarship, Excellence in Higher Education Endowment, now stand at nearly $8.8 million with the other funds, workers' compensation, tobacco settlement, and state agency pool, adding another $7 billion, for a combined total of nearly $15.8 billion as of December 31st. By the way, I like to round down. While that is great, I'm acutely aware of our state's challenges, noting here concerns that coal and gas revenue might well face some potentially long-term trials, and that folks in Washington continue to muck about with fiscal and monetary policy in ways that do little to add confidence to what seems to be a feeble but more and more certain recovery. I am therefore mindful of the increasing responsibility the Treasurer's Office will bear for the well-being of this state. We are and will continue to do our best to pull our weight. A few highlights. Our office has worked to refinance the state's 2005 Series Capital Facilities bonds, saving the state over $3 million in interest. Given the state's enviable S&P rating and the current climate of much lower interest rates, in this effort, I think you should note that investors looking for greater yields would, under these circumstances, seek to purchase bonds which might have more risk. Consequently, I want to thank those in Wyoming who chose to invest in this issuance. Such is the success of our state. In these months, I have learned more about WCDA, the Wyoming Retirement System, participated in State Board of Land Commissioners, State Loan and Investment Board, State Building Commission meetings. Additionally, as you can be aware, we will be advertising our second largest offering of unclaimed property in February, and my staff has been working very long hours cataloging, preparing to return to Wyoming citizens property that is rightfully theirs, but that through some accident of fate, they might have lost track of. In all that time, I have been formulating thoughts on the running of our office. 2 months is hardly enough time to develop a definitive notion of how to do that, but I want to point out today that we have been functioning with two fewer staff over the past year. In consultation with my senior staff, we have come to the conclusion that we can continue to do that and to operate with that staffing deficit for the time being. I do not want to leave you with the impression that I might not come back to this committee in future budgets requesting the reinstatement of those positions or one or the other of them, but I can assure you that if I do, it will be through a thorough review of my office, its expanding responsibility to our state's well-being, and a thorough explanation of why the position would be in order. It has been a few full months. In all this endeavor, however, it has been my honor to work with a dedicated staff. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for indulging me in this brief overview. And with that, I would like to turn over to Deputy Treasurer Garland the balance of my office's presentation. It was she who presented the budget to our office originally, and thus it is she who is most conversant with it. Please know that I or any of our staff are here to answer your questions. Thank you again. And I look forward to working with you over the years to come.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mark. And I appreciate, you know, you've had conversations with me and called me and made an effort and vice versa as well. And I appreciate that relationship that you started. And I think that's a good thing. Sharon, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sharon Garland with the State Treasurer's Office. I thought I would begin this morning by going through the budget. First of all, we do have a number of handouts that we presented to the committee. I might be referring to those along the way, but I'll start with the budget reductions, if that suits the committee chairman.
Well, you bet it does. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll refer to page 8 in our budget. In compliance with the governor's request to reduce our general fund budget by 8% for fiscal year 2014, the treasurer's office was to cut $612,018. Of that total, $165,900 is 8% of the general funds appropriated to our operations division. $421,400 is 8% of the general funds appropriated to for the Veterans Tax Exemption Program, and $24,628 is 8% of the general fund appropriations for the Indian Motor Vehicle Exemption Program. In our operations division, which is Division 001, Unit 0101, the $165,900 consists of eliminating one full-time position that's currently vacant. And that is salaries and benefits total of $138,751, and the balance of that is $27,239 is just in various 200 series monies. The governor has approved these recommendations. He has approved that cut. The second cut is a total of $421,400 in our Veterans Tax Exemption Program. That's a statutory program that the Treasurer's Office runs, as well as the Indian Motor Vehicle Exemption Program. And what we do is we reimburse the counties in the Veterans Program for property tax exemptions for qualified veterans. And for the Indian Motor Vehicle Program, it's to allow eligible members of the Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho Indian tribes on the taxes on their motor vehicles.
Yeah, let me interrupt you right there. That's isn't that a result of the Oklahoma Supreme Court decision about us not being able to charge them and having to be reimbursing? Isn't that how that all came about?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's correct.
Okay.
The Veterans Tax Exemption Program, the way the statute reads, it reads that the treasurer shall reimburse the counties. In the Indians, it says the treasurer may, and we did point that out to the committee previously and to the governor. Because the statute says it shall at this point in time, the governor decided not to to make that cut in either one of those programs. That's the basic, that's our basic budget, and I'll stop there and see if the committee has any questions on the budget itself.
Okay, on the go ahead, Steve. No, go ahead.
No, I think you got the question on the biennialized cut. Go ahead with that first.
Well, I just wanted to ask Don on the biennialized what this does in your opinion.
Mr. Chairman, relative to their operations, the State Treasurer's Office does cut 8% of that unit. However, the position that they're cutting is being cut for 24 months, which means next go around they will have to either find another position or make additional cuts. My calculations indicate that $79,576 in their budget reduction, or essentially half of it, cannot be biannualized. Just for the committee's background, if you turn to page 14, for example, you can see both of these things going on. First of all, the salaries, 103 and 105 series, that's the salaries classified, and then the employer-paid benefits. About half of those two numbers cannot be biennialized. And then if you drop down into the 200 series, again, I won't go through this every time, but for the committee's background, you can see that the Treasurer's Office has elected to remove $2,000 from the 201 series. Well, when we move into fiscal year 15-16, they will need to take 4,000 out, and there's not 4,000 there to take out. So if you add up all the areas where that occurs, that's where I think they will face a steeper cliff going into the next biennium.
And so I guess, Sharon, you don't have to answer this now, but I'd like to know how you are going to deal with that. Because clearly we have to look at 8%, and, you know, there's two ways to look at it. One is we can sort of do it along the way, or the other is we can have this same discussion that's not any prettier this fall and look at how you're going to deal with that. So I'd really appreciate your thoughts, and you too, Mark, how you want to deal with that. And I guess procedurally they'll give us a letter back on that. Is that the way that'll work? How do we do that?
Mr. Chairman, there's really no process yet established for that.
Well, I guess we'll just establish one now then. Get back to me on that.
Mr. Chairman, we're happy to do so.
Okay. Any other? Go ahead, Steve. Did you have anything else?
Just on the veterans exemption. I mean, your proposed cuts, how would that really affect the rest of the program? And I went blades up again, my technology, by the way, just now on my notes, but...
Mr. Chairman, I do have a summary of both of the programs in your handout. If you'll refer to, I believe it's handout number 055. It's a two-pager, and it's got a summary of the program, both the veterans and the Indians. And what I have done there is I am showing you the amount that we reimburse the counties from 2006 through the fall of 2012. And you'll see in the biennium 2007-08, we reimbursed the county for $4.2 million. That went up to $8.7 million in 2009-10. As with statutory changes, there become more eligible veterans. That again increased in 2011-12. And based on what we had in requests in 2012, it will increase again in 13-14. We've had an amount appropriated, and because it says the treasurer shall reimburse these counties every year, we have come back in and asked for that additional money. So, this will show what would happen if we did cut that. If we cut the 421.4, we would be short based on what we received, just based on estimates, what we think we might get in the fall of 2013. We'd be short about $267,000. If the cut is not taken, we might be ahead $153,000. Again, we don't know that. The requests go into the Department of Revenue. They really run this program. We just reimburse the counties based on what they send over to us.
You have a follow-up, Steve? Yeah, on that, there was obviously a substantial change in the law between 6 and 7 to expand it. Is that why it jumped so appreciably?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And then each of the other significant increases, were those statutory changes?
Mr. Chairman, there have been some statutory changes, but I think what really occurs is word of mouth. People just realize that this program is there, and so you have more people that are applying for it.
Well, it seems to me that if the legislature passes it and says you shall do it, and then we're going to ask you to cut it, I don't think that, I mean, I'd love to have you figure out how to do that, but it's kind of our baby on this one. So I guess I can understand that. And if we want to do something in that arena, then we'd have to do that ourselves. On the Native American side of that, that Supreme Court decision really drives that. We don't really have a choice. I mean, we could say we're not going to do it, and all they got to do is sue and we lose. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I'm not positive on that, but I would assume so.
County would have to pick it up. Okay. You got a question?
Yes, please.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. So I just to be clear, and I don't know if this is, maybe this is for Don or maybe it's for the Treasurer's Office, but as I, and just following up on that concept, I'm assuming that, I mean, since it says shall, I mean, if, what would be the, if there is a shortfall, if there's an 8% reduction like you've got projected, and we end up with a shortfall of 267,000 and change, I mean, does the Treasurer just pay that from other funds, or does it just not get paid because you can't run a deficit, or what would happen?
Sharon?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, if it were me, what I would do is come back to the committee and ask the committee. We wouldn't, I don't believe we would have it in any of our other funds in order to do that. Our operations budget, you know, even though we're going to have to make additional cuts, is fairly tight.
So Mr. Chairman, what you're saying, as I understand it, and which I think is probably right, I mean, there's not any money in that account. You can't write checks on an account that doesn't have any funds in it.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And so ultimately that would just fall back on the counties. Would just have to eat whatever their share is.
Mr.
Right?
Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
A little follow-up on that, too, that it seems like we're putting some of these agencies, the Treasurer in this circumstance, I think the Department of Health in another circumstance where primarily those agencies or departments are only custodians to a legislative program. And at least in two cases, I know that there's been cuts to that legislative program by the custodian. And to me, it seems like the custodian is not in a position actually to affect those cuts, that if those cuts have to be effective, they have to be made by the legislature. And essentially, if we want to make cuts in legislative programs, those are two that these tax exemptions are several that we could identify. There may be other legislative programs out there that are legislative directed, and we may have to look at them ourselves and ask ourselves the hard question, do we want to make those cuts? But I don't think it's really the place for the custodian to make those cuts in a program in which that's their primary function, is a custodian. So I think that's something that's a question that we're going to have to ask among ourselves. And but that being said, Mr. Chairman, I want to go back to the position cut and wondering what the effect would be that if we struck for the period of 24 months out, what essentially would that striking that language and just entirely deleting that position from this date forward, what effect that would have as compared to the effect of leaving the language of 24 months in, and either Sharon or Don or Brett could answer that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, who wants to answer that? Don?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, essentially if you cut it to 12 months, it would mean that the state treasurer would get to keep roughly $75,000. I'm not sure that was the intent, but that's what the practical reality would be.
It was to basically maybe rather than just cutting the language out, just saying that this position is eliminated from now forever until restored by the legislature. And what would that language have in effect to the 24-month language?
Don,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, that is the effect of the language. This position is cut indefinitely. But what they are doing is they're applying savings from this fiscal year 13, and fiscal year 14 to the fiscal year 14 budget reductions. So the intent of your interest is that the position go away indefinitely. And the proposal is just that. The benefit that they're getting is they're applying 2 years of savings because they've cut it July 1 of 2012. So they're benefiting from the period of FY13 when they weren't required to cut that position.
The position has been vacant basically for the whole current biennium, and so they want to realize the dollars that would normally be reversions plus any future dollars that would occur over the course of the next year.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, when you see that reference to 24 months, essentially what an agency is proposing to do is to take a position that has been vacant since the very beginning of the biennium, and they are proposing to receive credit for that reduction with respect to the 2014 budget reduction target. They're proposing that as part of that reduction. Ultimately, however, once they've proposed a position for any credit, whether it's 12 months, 15 months, 24 months, they are proposing to eliminate that position. So you'll see in some cases, as in this case, they're claiming the full 24-month credit against their 14 reduction. That reduction will continue into the 8% reductions for 15-16 because the position has been eliminated. However, they won't be able to garner any additional credit. Where you see it proposed for 12 months, they get 12-month credit with respect, as we saw with the state audit or with the Secretary of State, is a 12-month reduction against the 14 reduction target. When you go into 15-16 in that example, then they will receive that additional 12-month credit against the remaining cut that they have to identify for the 2015-2016 reduction target, because there is a second target. So that's the difference that you see when you see a 12-month or a 24-month or perhaps a 15-month against the 24-month.
Kurt?
And I guess a follow-up on that, all those savings then can't be used in the normal pool that would pay for vacation days or other days that the agencies usually use that reversion money for, and is that accounted for offset in your department, so it's not double counted and can't be used twice?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, that's correct. Essentially, what will occur if they're claiming the full 24 months within the context of the 14 reduction, we will pull that entire amount from the appropriation. So none of that funding will be available for application against leave payouts or anything of that nature. It will actually be pulled, in the case of a 24-month proposal, from the appropriation for the 13-14 biennium. And then you won't see it reflected in the 15-16 biennium.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sharon, I thought I understood in the opening comments that there were two FTEs that the office had decided that they could leave open for now, and yet we only see one of those FTEs showing up in the budget cuts. And just could you explain what that other FTE is, why it didn't show up in here? Because it seems like that would get us at least a little closer to the 8% if we had both of those.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the other position is not a generally funded position, and it's only general funds that we've been asked to cut. The other position is in our investment area, and it is funded with investment income.
Okay. All right. Anything else? The other thing when we look at the 8% that we're asking, and you know, your 65% of that is now gone because of the veterans exemption, and I think you probably, the governor is correct, and I would support that. But if we try to hang tough on the 8% when you send back the other information to us, and we got to look at next year, I'd be real curious as to what your thoughts are. I don't know if you can get there. And, you know, you take care of $15.8 billion, and I'm not excited about having someone not watching what you're doing there, because that's a huge investment. So, you know, there's some of these things we try to do, and we really want to get to these cuts and do what we need to do for the size of government, but there's some areas we may not be able to do. So if you'd think about that when you get back to us, we'd appreciate that. Then the other thing about Senator Meyer's comments, we should know that, but where you were like in 02 or 03 and where your staff is now, just so we can see over a longer period of time. Okay, any other questions of the committee? Thank you very much, Mark. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Senator Hastert, one of the things that we talked about earlier is that, like in the Senate, and it's the same in the House, is where you'll be responsible, like for our next one, which is workforce services. So when we get into that after Jones made her comments, we're going to look to you. So you get the first shot at any questions you have to kind of spear it, and you'll be the focal point in carrying it through. You okay with that?
Mr. Chairman, while you have a moment here between agencies, I will provide the committee this afternoon with the growth in FTE. If you want to pick a time, if you want it 01-02 biennium to compared to now or 3-4 biennium compared
what
to now.
What do you want, Kurt?
I think probably
01-02.
Mr. Chairman, we'll do that.
Okay, and I think Workforce Services had a bill in judiciary or in the Labor Committee. We had her up next. Is that correct? So we have our Department of Audit. Jeff's here. Why don't we, Don, we want to do that? I think they're in the judiciary, so we'll go ahead and start with audit. Is that what we want to do? Yeah, okay. Jeff, welcome. Come on up. And then let Joan know, and we'll work into after this. Good to see you. You know the drill. And, John, this is one of your committees or your agencies. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jeff Vogel, Director, Department of Audit, here to present our proposal on the 8% general fund budget reduction for the department. Start off with a brief overview of the department and the services it provides. The department audits and regulates to promote compliance with state revenue collections, state and local government accounting requirements, and the regulation of financial services providers. The DOA currently has 116 authorized positions. The budget for 2013-14 biennium is $25.4 million, of which $15.4 million is general fund money. $5.1 million is federal money, and $4.9 million is fee income from financial services industry regulated by the banking division. The 8% budget reduction for fiscal year 2014 will reduce the DOA's budget by $599,565 and authorize FTEs by one. With the IT consolidation, the department reduced its budget by an additional $395,923 and five additional FTEs. The projected revised budget for 2013-14 will be $24.4 million, of which $14.4 million will be general fund money, $5 million will be federal funds, and $4.9 million will be other fee or other income, which is from supervisor fees. Total FTEs going forward will be 110. The Department of Audit is in the compliance auditing business with three primary functional areas: revenue, accounting, and financial oversight. In the revenue area, mineral tax and excise divisions do the work there. These two areas support revenue collection to the state by conducting audits to verify payments of the state self-reporting taxes, fees, and royalties at revised cost of $12.8 million for 2013-14 biennium, including $5 million in federal funds and $200,000 in other funds. These audit functions serve to verify the accuracy of the money paid to the state and have identified additional collections of $81 million in mineral payments, along with $14 million in excise tax payments over the last 3 years. In the accounting area, the Public Funds Division as the workhorse here, and public funds perform state and local government audits to verify that funds and assets are properly accounted for and information provided to state leadership is accurate. The reduced cost is $6.3 million for the 2013-14 biennium, all of which is general fund money. These audits mitigate the risk of loss of federal funds to the state, along with inaccurate information being reported to the legislature, state, and federal agencies, and the general public at large. The Public Funds Division is also responsible for the statewide single audit and the CAFR contract, which is currently let to McGee, Hearn, and Pies at this time. In the financial area, we have the Banking Division, which regulates and examines banks, trust companies, money transmitters, mortgage companies, consumer credit providers that are operating in Wyoming to ensure their safety and soundness and adherence to consumer protection laws and regulations. This area is self-funded from fees collected from the industry at a cost of $5.2 million for the biennium. The Department of Audit will achieve the 8% general fund budget reduction of $599,565 as follows. In the Administration Division, Org 1, which is page 9 of the budget booklet, we will reduce the 200 series external, which is a cut for external maintenance agreements that was currently, excuse me, I've got to get my other sheet here. DOA admin had a contract for 24/7 intrusion detection for our network, and since with the IT consolidation, we were able to cut that $23,000 in appropriation there because that external maintenance agreement for those services will be provided by ETS going forward. We will be able to cut $23,135 in our 900 series in admin for professional fees that are allocated for the 2014 biennium that are no longer necessary or encumbered because those fees were for mainly for IT staff, and since we no longer have an IT staff, we don't need that appropriation going forward. The Division of Banking is 100% other funds, so it's not subject to the 8% budget cuts, so we have nothing to report there. The Public Funds Division, this is the largest amount of appropriation where we're going to cut by $280,000 through the competitive bid process for the statewide single audit and the CAFR contract. The bids came in well below what was appropriated, and so we can cut that excess appropriation by $280,000 and still have sufficient appropriation going forward in 2015-16 to cover the costs of the audit.
Yeah, on that right there, Jeff, I noticed that your bid for this year was like $1.7 million, and then your bid for the following year is $1.9 million. Was it did you do a four-year deal at one time and they were able to reduce it now, or are you just anticipating the 15-16?
Mr. Chairman, it's a four-year contract.
It's a four-year contract, yeah. So they put less now because it's still a two-year deal they're doing for the 1.7, right?
Right.
And 1.9, I believe, is for the next 2 years.
Exactly.
So that'll be in your next biennium. So that will be a reduction you'll be able to carry forward.
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead. Kurt?
But I guess considering that we've appropriated so much for the contract, in the absence of a requested budget cut, would those monies normally been reverted anyway?
Jeff?
Mr. Chairman, Dennis Grenier, fiscal officer.
Mr. Chairman, yes, those monies would have been reverted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, continue.
The next item, or next org is our Mineral Audit Division. We will propose cuts of $148,403 in our 100 series there, and that is to eliminate one vacant entry-level auditor position. That position, we targeted that position. We have a lot of turnover at the entry-level area anyway, and so We felt that that was probably the best area to cut. It will not impact our ability to perform quality audits in the, of energy companies going forward in a timely manner. And the last area is the excise tax division, which is page 28 of the booklet. Starting off, we will cut $68,137 in the 200 series out-of-state travel. That travel appropriation was associated with four positions that were cut and previously eliminated in prior years, so we don't have a need for that out-of-state, those out-of-state funds. It's just been riding in the budget for the last one or two bienniums, so that was an area that we felt that we could target as well. In the 500 series, we had some appropriation for space rental. That will no longer be required, and that's $16,890. And then in our 900 series, we had some contract money there of $40,000. That was to hire an independent audit firm for doing audits of companies that were located down in the southeast part of the United States that proved not to be cost beneficial to the state of Wyoming, and that's been that was several years ago, and that hasn't been eliminated from the budget either, and so we're proposing to cut that. You add it all up, it's about $600,000, right at $600,000, and these cuts will not have any impact on our ability to carry out our mandate of examination and auditing going forward.
Just a second, let John.
Couple here. Just I just wanted to be clear on one thing. When you talked about under Division of Banking, and I think that was the one I was hearing. Do you guys have regulation or oversight of the payday lending, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. They are responsible for licensing, examining, supervising, and enforcing the laws that govern payday lenders in the state.
And Mr. Chairman, currently I'm assuming we don't have regulations on interest that can be charged for those kind of for that kind of entity.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, there are limitations on the amount of the contract for those transactions. It is they're 1 month. Those contracts are 1 month in duration, and there's a 20% outstanding of the outstanding balance.
Anything else, John? Okay. Senator Meyer?
The auditor position, number two, how long has that been vacant?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that's been vacant for a little over 6 months, 7 months.
Okay. Thank you.
Don, question on the biennialization?
Mr. Chairman, they have four areas where I think they will have difficulty in biennializing. Number one is on page 23, as Senator Meyer notes, that position is vacant for 24 months, so we end up with the same issue we did with the state treasurer's office. $74,000 will not be available for the 15-16 cuts. Next, I draw your attention to page 30. On column three, they take the proposal is to reduce space rental by $16,890. You can see that they don't have that amount to double in the biennium, so that amount is not biennializable, as is the next line item under contract services. They've essentially zeroed out line 901. And my last point would be the $260,000 that you discussed in the committee, or $280,000 contract. Again, they don't have the ability to reduce another $280,000 in FY16. So if you add that all up, I think about $390,000 of their $600,000 cuts are not biennializable.
You get all that, Jeff?
I think so. I'll have to, reflect on it later to see if I totally understand.
Yeah, the choice is really is pretty simple. We can try to do things gradually, or when we come back in about 8 or 9 or 10 months, you're going to have a steeper hill to climb. And so what we're asking agencies to do is to react to that and come back with a plan of how you would do more of it now rather than try to deal with it later. So think about that and let us know.
Sure.
Anybody over here have any? Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to ask about the IT consolidation and how that went for your agency. Are you satisfied with how that shook out in the process, and are you receiving the level of support that you need for your ongoing operations in your agency?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wallace, we were on the front end of the ETS transfer of IT positions. We felt that it was in our best interest to be first. It was in the best interest of our IT staff to move over as soon as possible in order to ensure that they, you know, had the time in order to adjust, make the transition, and just to say it's worked extremely smoothly for our department. It's really no different than being out, you know, any company having, you know, a third-party vendor provide services to your company, and it's your responsibility to make sure that the third-party provider is providing the services that you need. And so we made sure that we visited frequently with members of ETS to ensure that they understood what our business plans were, our business models, and what level of services we needed going forward. And so it's been very it was helpful to our employees. It's been helpful to the Department of Audit. And we maintain regular communications with our ETS liaison to make sure that the services that we have come to expect are being provided by ETS. So it's been a good transition.
Okay, committee. Thank you. And if you get back to us on that and let us know your thoughts, we'd appreciate it.
We will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Okay, Joan, we're ready for workforce services, and I talked to Senator Scott, and he said you might have a bill up, and we didn't see you. We thought you might be in the Labor Committee, so we didn't mean to bump over you, but please come forward and welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Joan Evans, Director, Wyoming Department of Workforce Services, Angie Buchanan, our Chief Financial Officer, and yes, we were doing a math class this morning in Labor Committee, so it was kind of fun talking about unemployment insurance. Mr. Chairman, how would you like to proceed? Just walk through the proposed reductions and the governor's recommendations.
Absolutely, and refer to pages and explain why and what. And we'll have some questions for you.
Absolutely. All right. We'll start out, Mr. Chairman, on page 13. These proposed reductions came out of the Office of the Director, general funds, and those proposed reductions were for in-state travel, equipment rental, and those reductions were accepted by the governor. All right, moving on then, page 17. The Workforce Development Training Fund, again, a generally funded program to assist businesses in a variety of ways. This particular area of the fund was for pre-hire training grants, typically used to assist attracting new business to Wyoming. The proposed cut was $302,100, and that cut was not accepted by the governor.
Be sure and refer to the page you're on, please.
Okay. And that was on page 17, moving on to 18. Mr. Chairman, moving on to page 20, looking at the unit of quality child care within the department. Again, a generally funded appropriation put forth for training and awareness for quality care in Wyoming. The recommendation presented to the governor was to reduce this by $315,140. This would have reduced several things within that program, travel, participant funds, which would have eliminated about 75 opportunities for individuals to receive scholarships through that program, and contractual services related to the training and awareness component with our providers, literacy and professional development for providers. And the governor did not accept that recommendation. Moving on to page 23, the employment and training unit within the department. We had recommended that this particular area be decreased by $379,902. That would have done basically four different things. Again, travel in and out of state. But participant funding would have been reduced for folks receiving training opportunities to become employable. And then also our ability to contract with educational providers for things like GED programs or job training opportunities, and also our career readiness certificate program. And that recommendation was not accepted by the governor. Moving on to page 27. This is in our vocational rehabilitation unit. Many of our vocational rehabilitation funds come from federal dollars, but they're leveraged against state dollars. So the funds that we had to target here in this unit were very small because we did not want to put general funds on the table that would inhibit our ability to leverage those against the federal dollars for our participants. So what we recommended here was a reduction of travel, which we heavily utilize video conferencing in our agency already, but we would just more so rely on that and limit the opportunities for folks to travel out of state. And the governor did recommend approval of those suggestions. That pretty much wraps.
Okay, thank you. John, you have any questions you want to get into?
Well, not so much at the moment, Mr. Chairman. I just noted that the governor denied several of your budget reduction requests. Were there other offsetting or requirements from the governor's office in cutting in other areas? Or if I mean, I was trying to understand how that part worked. I was just going through there thinking, you know, with all of these other reductions, or his not. And I have to carry the agency on the floor, so I'm trying to figure out. So were there other reductions in other areas, or was that just pretty much it with his denial? They were good with what we have right now.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hassler, I think a couple of things. First, we have a small amount of general funds within the agency to target for reductions. The big parts of this, of our general funds, come from the Workforce Development Training Fund and the Y Quality Counts program, and then, again, some of the administration that I pointed out during the presentation. I think, not speaking for the governor or his staff, but I think the idea here is keeping those funds in place for businesses and participants to be able to utilize. As I explained, that's where those reductions would have hit. It wasn't like reducing infrastructure within the agency and things like that.
Anything else? You know, Don, on the biannualization, there's nothing to biannualize. I mean, there's just no, we're so far from the 8%. If we had to tell you 8%, that's what we got to have, what would you do?
Mr. Chairman, I would stick with our recommendations. That really is our option. I mean, that's where it needs to come from if we need to do it. And so, we have done it before.
So tell me in the real terms, like out in the state, give me some examples of what would happen if we said, okay, we're gonna not accept the governor's recommendation, we're gonna go with your recommendation. Tell me some real time examples of what it would be like.
Mr. Chairman, the Workforce Development Training Fund is a huge tool for employers and a big tool for economic development. We work very closely with the Wyoming Business Council as they're looking at ways to say Wyoming is a great place to do business. And so if you're looking at relocating here, we have an opportunity to ramp up a workforce to be ready to meet your needs, those kinds of things. We do publish a report yearly that's provided to the legislature on the ways that those funds are utilized. We did hear a lot of feedback from businesses individually and also groups like the Wyoming Economic Development Association, Travel and Tourism, those folks saying, you know, businesses, we will be very disappointed if there is limited access to those funds. We did take a 5% reduction in the Workforce Development Training Fund under Governor Friedenthal's cuts as well. So that fund has already seen cuts, again, just because of the limited nature of places within the agency that we can pull general funds.
5% that Dave cut, you didn't put that back in. That's still out of there,
it's
right?
It's still out of there. Mm-hmm. It is.
You know, one of the great things that Workforce Services does for existing employers, and I'm one of them, and we have a tremendous relationship with your people in Fremont County. They really help us in terms of finding people, looking for work, and all those different areas. Now, are we talking about that? Are we talking about primarily relocating? And because I don't hear that side of it. I don't hear anybody saying that's a program that they are going to be upset if we cut. Are we talking about those kind of things, or are we talking about the real-life people that live every day in Wyoming, work every day, or they're getting assistance from?
Mr. Chairman, there's two sides to that. You're talking about our local workforce centers that we have 23 of them located out around the state. That's a federally funded program through the Department of Labor and the Workforce Investment Act. So those programs aren't considered in an 8% reduction,
right,
because it's federally funded. What I'm talking about, what was proposed to the governor to cut, is the Workforce Development Training Fund, a generally funded program created by the legislature to support Wyoming businesses in a couple of different ways. One, the pre-hire, which is helping a business ramp up to do business, and the other part of that fund helps incumbent workers receive training to either be retained in their positions or receive a better opportunity for employment within a particular company. So that's the part that we're putting on the table for a reduction, because that's a generally funded program. Again, the quality child care program. If we went back to the original recommendation to the governor, we would just not be able to accomplish as much of what the legislation outlined for the department to do. We would have to reduce the magnitude of the program.
Don, a question, and if we don't go along with the governor's recs and we go along with what the department recommended, what does that do to us in the next biennium?
Mr. Chairman, from what I can tell, they have sufficient funds in each of those line items so that those cuts could be biennialized. It would exacerbate any of the loss of services or travel or whatnot, but I see no math issue there.
Yeah, and I understand that. Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick moment to editorialize, just briefly. You know, I just kind of feel, and what I've seen here and what the director's explained and what we know about, and I'm just going to say bang for the buck, you know, I've been kind of an opponent of across-the-board cuts, because it's always been some agencies can take it better and some can't. Services to the people of Wyoming, and, you know, like I just said, bang for the dollar, you know, in some areas that, and I think where the governor had the insight to say, hey, this is going to dramatically, be an issue to the, you know, to the people of Wyoming, that, you know, that, they, you know, that other agencies or other places, you know, to cut, and, you know, I guess that's why I'm just quickly going to just say that, you know, across the board isn't always, you know, just the best interest for us.
Representative Burkhart.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Director Evans, when the two departments Department of Employment, Department of Workforce Services were combined, there was talk about economies of scale. And if you compare the employment that you have here with what you currently have, you're down only one. Were any of those economies of scale realized?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, are you talking about one position?
One position.
Right.
Right. On page 8, if you add them up, you had 570 positions, and in your budget you have 569.
Go ahead, Joan.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, that's a very good question. That one position, again, would have been the director of the Department of Employment. That was eliminated. The way that the reorganization was structured, it was not with the intent to eliminate or reduce the force of the two agencies. Where we're at right now and the philosophy within the agency is to get the reorganization accomplished and rebuild it to where it is very functional and can meet the needs of the constituents with the programs that we offer. Every vacancy is analyzed as far as is it needed. Is it needed where it was, or should it be redeployed? We have redeployed several vacancies within the agencies to do completely different roles. I'll give you an example. The way we respond to constituents is a single point of focus. That's our Deputy Lisa Oswald. Through that process, we understand that businesses are confused about, they don't understand how to register for their UI tax account, their workers' comp. It's all confused. They have to call two different people. A lot of points of confusion for Wyoming businesses. So we determine we need a point of contact for our businesses. So we take a position from someplace else, and we create a way for a business to have a no-wrong door when they enter our agency. I think we've got to clean up the way the agency functions before we can start looking at reducing our force. Now, I will say that between the two combined agencies from when I took over 6 years ago, I believe we're close to 50 positions down, 5-0, through attrition, through hiring caps, freezes, those kinds of things, and budget office could confirm that, but I think it's 47 or something like that. Brett, maybe, you know, think so? Oh, yeah.
You please do more than this, Brett.
Mr. Chairman, I would have to take a look at those numbers to be able to verify that information. I just have not done so.
Mr. Chairman, my point is, and we could get you the exact number, we have significantly reduced the infrastructure of both of those agencies through a variety of ways. We continue to look at diligent ways to make this reorganization be very cost-effective. But we had to really start at the very beginning. We're talking things like co-locating offices, using one copier instead of five, completely utilizing motor pool cars that were assigned to the two different agencies. I mean, it's a tedious process to go through all of that, and I think that we will be able to continually report to you on the nitty-gritty parts of that and how it's had a better bottom line. However, we have to also take into consideration UI claims are up, workers' comp, medical costs are up. There's things that affect the bottom line that we don't have control over budgetary-wise with the agency. So there's just, you know, there's a lot of different pressures on this. I totally see what you're saying, Representative Burkhart, that on paper it shows one.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Another question, let's see, page 23 indicate reduction in employment and training. Has the potential to eliminate from training 25 people. Are all the classes full currently?
Joan?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, those would be individuals receiving training, and so they may be, they could be in 25 different things. So one might be taking a class at a community college, one might be taking something from the Contractors Association. Those are not necessarily all paid in a lump sum, but they are attached to an individual.
Anybody else? Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Evans, just to go back and maybe follow up on a couple of the Chairman Bebout's questions. Looking at, for example, page 17, where we're talking about the we're talking about the pre-training grant funds. Is this the kind of training that would be only available through the state, or would there be – I'm trying to get a grasp on what would happen if we did follow through with recommended cuts. if the department had to reduce their training in this area, would it be training and types of training that would be available to employers if they decide to go out and get a contractor to come in and do that sort of, do the training? Do you understand what I'm getting at?
John?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, it would reduce an opportunity for the state to partner with employers that are looking at starting to do business in our state. There are specific partnership requirements that are tied to that funding. They involve education and economic development. And so it was set up to really create an opportunity to support the economy. It would just mean that less of that could happen. And again, this fund took a reduction prior in prior budget cuts as well. I can give you an example of recently we were able to support through this fund and with some funding also from the Workforce Development Council, a project in Saratoga to get the sawmill going again because they needed to ramp up that workforce with training. Now, your other part of your question was, could the employer just do that on their own? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I don't know what resources might be have been available to that employer, but it's a way for the state to partner. And that's really the way the legislation, I believe, was crafted at the time it was assigned to the agency. So it would mean, as if we further reduce that these areas, that those opportunities would be fewer.
And Mr. Chairman, so the, I mean, really there's I just want to make sure that there's not, it's not that an employer would not have the opportunity to have the same training done. It's that they would essentially have to pay for it themselves instead of the state partnering with them and facilitating with them to do that training.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, yes.
And Mr. Chairman, just to veer a little bit on another topic that you and I have visited on before, and I just wanted to get an update. We've spoken about the problems with reimbursement under workers' comp for medical providers, and I know you've been working through those issues. Can you give us, as a committee, just a quick update on where you are as far as getting that addressed and making sure providers are getting their payments timely?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, prior to the reorganization, the former Department of Employment was working on a replacement system for the workers' comp program. That was completed and launched over Labor Day weekend. The new system is called PowerSuite, and as we all know, everything's supposed to be new and shiny. There were data conversion issues when that system went live. So provider, some records associated with provider payments were lost and just never anywhere. We've been working the last 3 or 4 months to identify what was lost, who was impacted, and some of that was just basically through a process of folks coming forward and saying, hey, I have not been paid. I would say about a month ago, we really were at the crisis point with this. I mean, there was a huge backlog of folks that had not been paid. We were still struggling with some pretty significant technology issues to repair it. We're really climbing out of that. We're providing weekly updates to the governor's staff on this, and the amount of payments that are being processed each week, and in fact daily, if we identify someone that's hugely behind, is significantly improving. So I feel like we're in a better place with that every single day. And if you are hearing from providers that have not been paid, if we can please contact them, we can rectify that.
And Mr. Chairman, just, and I certainly won't hold you to this, but do you have sort of an estimate on when you think you'll be back to pretty current and on a regular payment basis with providers?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, that information I'm sure is available from our workers' comp staff. I just don't have it right in front of me.
Okay. Representative Burkhart? We're going to wrap up in about 3 minutes because we've got to be on the floor of the House to hear from the big boss. So go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question to follow up on Representative Stubson's question on the roughly $7 million in program assistance, 7.3. In previous years, has any of that money reverted or has it all been used?
Joan?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just asking our CFO about that. Mr. Chairman, I can get you the specifics. It sounds like maybe 6 years ago or 5 or 6 years ago we may have reverted some general funds with that program, but not aware of anything lately. Currently.
Okay, we're gonna wrap up here. Go
Mr.
ahead.
Mr. Chairman, follow. I just our workers' comp administrator to answer Representative Stubson's question, February 1st.
Okay, I think the one thing that I'm hearing, and I think we're all concerned about, and is, you know, the inability with the governor's recs to get anywhere near the 8%. So, you know, we'll let us think about what your thoughts are, and maybe we'll have a call back on that to discuss that further. We'll let you know, Joan, on that, because I understand, but it may be that we very well want to agree with him. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Anybody
Chairman.
Else have any last-minute questions? Senator Perkins. Oh, Senator Doxbitter, how did I miss you? Just raise your arm.
You were looking that direction. Just really quickly, what I hear from you, Director, is workforce training fund, quality child care, you can still make it happen even with the reduction. I didn't sense a real concern there that it would all go away. It would still continue.
Mr. Joan? Chairman, Senator Doxbitter, it would not continue in at its current capacity. Capacity would be reduced in each program, which would affect, on the quality child care side, both workers in the child care field and child care businesses, and on the Workforce Development Training Fund side, our Wyoming businesses seeking assistance with training. The capacity would be less. The programs would not be eliminated.
Do you have a quick follow-up? Okay. Anybody else? One last shot.
Mr. Chairman, the beauty of technology, my staff down the street did email me with respect to the position reductions associated with workforce services. Since 2009-10, they have reduced positions by 31.
Okay, I guess the question is, I don't understand why we don't see it in there relative to Representative Burkhart's question, so clarify that for us. Okay, we're gonna shut it down and go to the House chambers. Mr. Co-Chair, 3 o'clock?
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock, everybody. We'll be back here.
I don't know how I got mixed up. I heard you say 3 o'clock, and I wasn't paying attention that we was already scheduled for 8. It's just out there daydreaming.
Thanks.
There's our position count back to...